And welcome to Augusta Free Press on Facebook. I am Chris Graham, joined by Crystal Graham, and we're going to talk some Virginia news, specific. I'm sure a lot of our show will be about COVID-19 and the news today from Governor Northam, his press conference, I think still ongoing, or actually it just ended a couple minutes ago, announcing that Virginia will move into phase three of the public health reopening next week on July 1st, next Wednesday. So Crystal, big news, unexpected news from those of us in our newsroom anyway.
Right. Last week, Governor Northam kind of outlined what phase three was going to look like, as he said, so businesses could start preparing for, you know, their eventual reopening or what might be happening in phase three. But he decided not to give a date last week. Many of us anticipated that a move to phase three would be coming soon. However, there was no indication as to whether that would be announced this week or not. So again, the governor's been doing these ongoing news conferences really on Tuesdays and Thursdays for a while now. And today he did announce that Virginia will move to phase three on July 1st. Chris, if it's okay with you, I thought I might break down a little bit of what that means.
Well, first I wanted to say the context for why it was a surprise. It's not just because he didn't give a specific last week. Mm-hmm. There have been, you know, numerous media reports, of course, the gloom and doom in the national media still is what it is. And you're hearing about, I'm going to put air quotes, spikes in cases in states like Arizona and Texas and Florida. And so, I mean, the anticipation was on my part that because of those spikes in cases, which have not led to a related spike of any kind in any of those states and hospitalizations, which is supposedly the important measure, or in deaths. The thought was, my fear was, that even though Virginia's numbers have been great, and we'll talk more about the numbers, I guess, as we get into this, that Virginia may be held back because of media reporting about other states. So Governor Northam addressed that actually in his press conference and said that, yeah, Virginia's numbers are looking good. We'll continue to move forward. And so credit, I want to give credit. I've been very critical of Governor Northam. I want to give credit. And now, yes, let's talk about what the phase three means for Virginia.
Right. And I know that we will talk more about those numbers here shortly, because that's an important part of the story too. And how those numbers are reported, I think, is important as well. But to break it down just a little bit, so what phase three really means is, you know, you're still encouraged, or still required, to wear face coverings in indoor public spaces. The governor is still saying that physical distancing and enhanced cleaning is still required, and it's he's continuing to encourage teleworking when possible. All that being said, you know, phase three doesn't mean that, you know, all restrictions are lifted. There's still those ongoing restrictions, but social gatherings will be able to go up to 250 people. If you're using an event space, however, they're saying that it's up to 50% of the occupancy of the event space, or 250 people, whichever is less in that situation. But for some businesses, things will get back to normal, and that includes, like, as normal as possible with those guidelines in mind. Non-essential retail restrictions are lifted. Restaurants and beverage services, that includes wineries, cideries, things of that nature, restrictions are lifted. So again, they do have to continue to have the physical distancing and the enhanced cleaning. If you go to the governor's website, and we put a link to that on the Augusta Free Press Facebook page, what phase three kind of looks like, you'll see it's very detailed. There has to be signage, there has to be, you know, a certain amount of space depending on the business, that kind of thing. So there's a lot of things that basically the governor's office is saying, you must do this or remain closed. So still some things to come there. For gyms, they can now open at 75% of the lowest occupancy load on whatever their certificate of occupancy is. But they still have to keep that 10 feet of physical distancing. So in a lot of cases in gyms where equipment is very close together, that still means that, you know, every other day certain machines are going to be open and things of that nature. One of the big ones for the summertime is that indoor and outdoor swimming pools, which had been pretty much limited to exercise, swim instruction, and diving at this point, pools may open at 75% of capacity. Again, they're still encouraging physical distancing and enhanced cleaning. And I think from reading those guidelines, you kind of have to assign someone whose role it is to kind of be the person to say, okay, we need some space in between people. If they're not in your pod of people, you know, that you're quarantined with, so to speak, that you're social distancing distancing with it, you know, you might have to, they might request you to spread out a little bit. But again, in the cases of, I think Stanton and Waynesboro both shut down their pools for the summer, but this still applies to private places. I would imagine if they decide to reopen, like Club at Ironwood, we've got Pine Bluff Pool, the Waynesboro Country Club, which is now Waynesboro City Collective. So there'll still be some applications here for people who are listening in. Some things that he had mentioned before, recreational sports are open, but they still require physical distancing. Overnight summer camps remain closed. But then one of the big ones that we've talked about before, Chris, many, many times, is places like the Wayne Theater, Shenandoah Shakespeare Theaters, like the Visualite and the Zeus in our areas. They may now, and I looked this up because I had thought it was 75%, but it's actually 50%. Their occupancy, they can open, but their occupancy cannot exceed 50%, again, of their certificate of occupancy, or a maximum of 1,000 people. And if you're doing a private booking with them, like if you're doing some kind of a special event and you're booking that, then that's going to be limited to 250 people. So that kind of bounces back to that social gathering rule. So the good news for that is that a lot of businesses can start planning, you know, that the businesses like the theaters, the entertainment venues, that kind of thing, they can start planning. I'm sure that there's a lot to kind of put in place there. But starting July 1st, they will be able to, you know, in many cases, either places will be able to expand the number of people that they have in there, remove restrictions entirely. But I believe that this whole thing about, you know, enhanced cleaning and distancing and that kind of thing is going to stick around for a little while. I haven't heard anything about a phase four, so I don't know if it just means that at the end of phase three, that these restrictions are lifted. You know, a bigger conversation about this kind of revolves around the schools going back. You know, most of the schools here look to go back the first week of August. And of course, when the governor first laid out those plans, he was talking more specifically about phase two, but they also did discuss phase three. So the good news for school systems is that it looks like for planning purposes now, they can be looking more at that phase three. And, you know, it is possible that we'll be out of phase three before, you know, before we open up the school systems. But there hasn't been any talk by the governor yet of what's next. You know, is there a phase four, a phase five, or, you know,
there's no phase four, phase three. And it's not to say, like, we went through, if we get to July 1st, that's 3.5 weeks of phase two. We had 3 weeks of the phase one. It's not like there's only 3 or 3.5 weeks or whatever of phase three. It is simply, at this stage, you continue to monitor numbers and you make decisions based on those numbers. And so the phase four is just life as we knew it before. And I'm not sure what has to happen at that stage, because we are here now and we didn't necessarily anticipate really getting here, even though it was laid out a few weeks ago. You know, the numbers are trending in the direction of positivity, and we just have to wait and see. And I know a lot of people are get paid a lot of money, both at the state level, the governor and his advisory team, and at various local levels, all the folks in local government, local school administrations, they've got to continue to plan as if, you know, the first week of August comes and we're still in phase three. But it very well could be the case, Crystal, as you made the point, that we could maybe be beyond phase three by that stage. But, you know, you've got to prepare for all contingencies, I suppose, is the way to put this.
Right. So, Chris, I wanted you to talk a little bit about those numbers that you were referencing. In the news conference today, a reporter asked a question, because apparently, you know, you have a really good grasp of how this all works, but some numbers that are reported are old numbers. You know, people get tested, it takes a while for the test numbers to come in. And so even when you're seeing trends, you know, where you might say, oh, there were, you know, in this case, 20 some deaths, you know, related to COVID or, you know, something of that nature, it doesn't necessarily mean that it happened in the last week or the last few days. It just means that that's when it's reported. I was hoping maybe you could break down for people who have tuned in a little bit about those numbers, and not specifically our numbers yet, you know, over the last 7 days or whatever, but more specifically just how that all works. Because I think that, unfortunately, there's a lot of people who have confusion about those numbers, and some of them happen to be reporters. And so there's a lot of misinformation out there right now.
Well, a lot of people who aren't reporters have confusion because of reporters who are confused, right? So right. The big issue here is, I mean, those who watch this conscientiously with any degree of understanding. And unfortunately, that doesn't include a lot of our media core here, both in Virginia and nationwide, have noticed trends in this. You know, none of us, nobody. There were only major national newspapers and TV networks have an assigned medical reporter. And those folks are largely people who just wanted other, you know, other jobs and got stuck with the medical beat. As of 3 months ago, none of us looked at these numbers on any kind of regular basis. So we don't, you know, you don't look at CDC numbers and VDH numbers on death during flu seasons or just normal reports each week. And these reports are produced each week. Mm-hmm. One thing that we've all come to notice, at least those of us, again, who are conscientious about this, is that reporting, even though the reports are produced each day, including on weekend days, the numbers that are reported out publicly on Saturdays, Sundays, even Mondays, are different than the ones that reported out on Tuesdays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, Fridays. And so what happens is on Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays, you'll often see low numbers of, in the case of, again, we're paying close attention to it now, deaths associated with COVID are lower on Saturdays, Sundays, and Mondays. And then on Tuesday is the makeup day. Anything that had been reported that got lost over the weekend, Saturday, Sunday, even into Monday, gets lumped into Tuesday. And so you never get too excited. You know, you get to a point where you know not to get too excited about Saturday, Sunday, and Monday having low numbers of cases or low numbers of deaths, because on Tuesday it's sort of the correction day. And so over the weekend, I think it was four deaths were reported on the VDH website on Saturday, and I think it was 9 on Sunday and 11 on Monday and 23 today. And a reporter asked Governor Northam at the end of his press conference, that was a record number of deaths in a day. Well, one, it is nowhere near a record number of deaths in a day. The 7-day rolling average back on May 5th, the 7-day average was 34 per day. The 7-day average as of now, and that's deaths actually that were recorded on that day, not reported, but recorded. They happened on that date on May 5th, 34 people, the average was on May 5th. Of reports per day. The rolling average now is 5 per day. It's great. These are great numbers. I mean, all the other numbers are great. There are people in the media who just want to make them look bad. So, you know, and as a result, you know, there are folks out there watching now and who aren't watching now, who should be watching now, this particular Facebook podcast, who are going to be misled into thinking that Governor Northam is making a silly decision to move Virginia to phase 3. That is not the case at all. And there are more numbers, maybe, Crystal, that we should probably spell out to kind of help illustrate this point.
Yeah, that's exactly what I wanted you to do. I know you published a story, the one that happened to be about moving to phase 3, that broke down the numbers really over the 7-day kind of like rolling period that you were discussing. So I was hoping maybe you could talk a little bit about those numbers. Obviously, when you looked at those today, you felt like, okay, things were on a downward trend, you know, related to the things that matter. And the governor said repeatedly that the things that matter about moving from, you know, phase to phase, it's not necessarily that the virus is completely gone. It's just that if you do contract the virus and you're someone who shows symptoms, since many people do not, is there enough PPE available for hospitals? Is there beds available for hospitals? You know, those are the kinds of things that he's looking at. And those numbers have continued to stay low throughout the state of Virginia. So I thought, was hoping you could maybe break down those numbers, Chris. I know you took kind of a deep dive into those today and reported those.
And for those watching who maybe don't read, I try to write one of these stories every day. It could get repetitive, but I just want to show you that things are turning in the right direction. The 7-day moving average of new cases in Virginia is at 523. That's down 56.2% from the recent peak of 1195 per day back on May 31st. For context, on May 31st, we were about to move from phase 1 to phase 2. We still had 1195 new cases per day average on that date, and we still moved from phase 1 to phase 2. We're over 50% down from that, so that's a great thing. The number of Virginians hospitalized, this is the most important number of all. The number of Virginians hospitalized with COVID-19 is 847 per day. On May 29th, again, as we were getting ready to move from 1 to 2, we were at 1524. We're down 44.4%. Hospitals in Virginia, hospitalization numbers are the important numbers. We have 26.2% of our beds open. Reporters, I'm going to slam the business we work in, because the business we work in, most people who are reporters have no actual business background. They can barely balance their own checking accounts. And so they don't know things like, well, it sounds like if you only have 26% of your beds open, you're at 73 or 74% of your capacity. Boy, that sounds like an awful lot of people in hospitals. Hospitals run at 70 to 80% of capacity. And in the flu peak flu season, they'll be 80 to 90% of capacity. It's a business. You don't have unused beds. Unused beds are like hotel rooms that you can't rent out. They make money. Hospitals in America make money. We don't have a universal healthcare system. They have to monetize these beds. They only have enough beds that they can actually use. So we're at 26.2% of our beds open. And back on April 30th, and I picked out this date for a reason. April 30th is when Ralph Northam, the governor, lifted his ban on elective medical procedures. Basically, for 6 weeks, hospitals couldn't book elective procedures, and people largely weren't going unless they had COVID to hospitals for anything. And back on April 30th, we had 31.9% of our beds open. We've gone from 31.9% when no one else could go to the hospital to 26.2% open. That tells you that things are in really like a really nice state of modicum. They're even out now. The number of Virginia patients COVID-19 in ICU beds today is at 245. That's 12.3% of our state's overall ICU capacity, 12.3%. And that's down, and that number itself is down 41.1% from the recent peak back on May 28th, again, as we were moving from phase one to phase two. One other number I'll throw out, COVID-19 patients on ventilators. You know, 3 months ago, we were all worried about not having enough ventilators. The state of Virginia has hospitals in the state of Virginia have a combined 2,995 ventilators on hand. 126 of those are being used today by COVID-19 patients. 4.2% of our state's stock of ventilators being used by COVID-19 patients. So what I'm trying to say is, folks, things are looking really good. There's no reason for Ralph Northam not to have moved us to phase three based on all these numbers.
Yeah, it seems like good news. As you said, both of us weren't quite sure that he would make an announcement today, thought that he might postpone it until Thursday or even later, you know, just based on some of those trends in other states.
And I want to interrupt just for this reason, because it's fresh in the head. I talked about Virginia having 26.2% of its hospital bed capacity open and those other states that you keep hearing about. For those who I have the attention of right now, I looked up a few other states' numbers. This is what I do. When sports comes back, I'll be able to worry about offensive efficiency and that kind of thing. Florida, hospitalization. We're hearing about Florida having this massive spike and surge and all these other nouns that sound bad. Virginia's at 73.2% of its capacity. Florida's hospitals today, as of their update earlier today, 67.2%. They've got more hospital beds open than we've got for a state having a surge ongoing. Texas, 73.4%. We're at 73.2. That's another state with a surge. Now, Arizona is at 83%. So but they're still within realm of a very busy seasonal flu season there. North Carolina supposedly having a surge. They're at 76% of capacity. South Carolina supposedly having a surge. Now, they don't give a statewide number. They give regional numbers. And so four regions that they divine on their site between 61.4% and 73.3%. These states are the states that are supposedly surging. They're not anywhere near level. In fact, they're very much within normal levels of hospitalization rates. So what I'm telling you is the media is feeding you a bunch of BS. And they know it. That's the thing that really frustrates you, is that they know it. Where we are right now with testing, we should be doing what we're doing. Crystal, you and I personally know people who have gone through a COVID testing because of someone that they know having been exposed to COVID asymptomatically. And we know that what the result of this is a bunch of asymptomatics. We know personally a bunch of asymptomatic people are extrapolating that out, are being determined to have had COVID. They don't have symptoms. They're not sick. They're working from home. And then they get a negative test, I guess a couple of negative tests, they go back to work. That's what we're supposed to be doing. We're supposed to, at this stage, we're not worried about just the most dangerous cases out there. The people in nursing homes, 85 years old and older, who make up 60% of those dying from COVID. We're not just now worrying about the most vulnerable people. Now we're trying to say, hey, let's find the 30-something, the 20-something, the 30-somethings, 40-somethings who are not going to succumb to this disease. Let's make sure, hey, let's just let them work from home for a couple weeks, get them out of the population so we can stop the spread of this. And that's what we're supposed to be doing. That's what the cases are being. When you talk about surges in these other states, the surges in these other states are young people who aren't going to the hospital. Hospitalization numbers in those states I just showed you are not going up. The system's working. This is how it's supposed to work. And now we're being told by the media that this is supposed to close things down. It's ridiculous, Crystal. And for the few folks out there watching, it's ridiculous. The system is working. This isn't a bug. It's a feature. And yet, the media, people who have no clue how to report this stuff are just trying to whip you up into a frenzy to get you to click on things.
Shifting gears just a little bit, Chrissy, you were on the Mark Moses Show out of Melbourne, Florida this morning. And one of the things that you talked about was the MLB. So I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about what you see coming up related to sports. We talked a little bit about how that's a big deficit in our life right now as big sports fans. I know the Virginia High School League, it sounds like, is meeting later this week to make some decisions related to the upcoming school year and that kind of thing. But I know that MLB, some people thought that maybe a decision would have been made on Sunday that was delayed. What are you kind of hearing on that? What do you anticipate happening in both scenarios?
Well, the VHSL meets, the executive committee meets on Thursday. They announced that yesterday. Seems like they may have had advance word that phase three was coming. But there's still, in phase three, you can't play certain sports. So, but you can do more things in terms of practicing involuntary workouts and that kind of thing. Thursday, the VHSL executive committee will meet and determine next steps. We're not in a stage right now in the high school sports season because we're in the summer season where things are impacted. But in a few weeks, we could be. If football practice would start normally around August 1st, roughly speaking, that's 5 weeks from now. So, but the VHSL will be laying out the next steps for the next few weeks, at least, on Thursday. So we'll be looking for that news. MLB, you got to read your AFP, Crystal. MLB had some news and we wrote about it today. The owners, have voted, to approve a 60 game season, that will start roughly July 24th. That date is not firm, but July 24th looks like the target date for starting. Contingent upon the players signing off on health protocols, the players' association has indicated they will do so. It seems like things are just moving in the direction. Now we're just having to lock down dates, not just July 24th, but apparently the date, and teams are going to do their extended spring training, I guess we'll call it, from home bases. We already know we had a little birdie plan us to see that the Baltimore Orioles were officially working out this past weekend in Camden Yards. And so teams across the landscape will be practicing in their home cities, in their home stadiums, starting around July 1st, formally. The informal workouts until then, formal workouts starting July 1st. Games to start again around July 24th. Looks like that's the target date. 60-game schedule. It looks like, I talked earlier in the Mark Moses Show, since I talked with him, there's been a little bit more guidance. It looks like the original plan had been to stay geographical, but now it looks like they're going to just play a schedule within the league. So the National League, American League will play like they normally do. 60 games in a 70-day period. I think the date I saw for the drop-dead date to end the regular season will be September 27th. No expanded playoffs. Got to correct that from earlier, too. The understanding as of about 3 hours ago when I talked to Mark was that there'd be expanded playoffs, but looks like we're going to just have the normal playoffs we've had the last several years in Major League Baseball. And so I think I've covered the hard basics there. The most
What are the plans related to fans at those games? Has there been any talk about whether fans will be allowed?
At this stage, you have to presume, and again, we're a month out, because today is June 23rd, so you're talking about a month and a day out. Things are so fluid. I've been saying this for 2 months. Every day, every hour of every day, we learn more that makes us a little more comfortable. If I had to bet right now, the season starts without fans. It may even go all the way through without fans. You're talking July 23rd to September 27th. That's only a two-month window. You could see fans later in the season. NASCAR, for example, did its first several races with no fans this past the race that was just yesterday because of rain. Moved back a day, actually had 5,000 fans. It wouldn't surprise me if, as the season goes on, there are some social distancing And it would be based on location, you know, there it would be based on the health guidelines of the cities involved. Wouldn't surprise me if there wouldn't be a limited number of fans allowed at some games as the season goes on. It would surprise me though that the early games would have fans. Now I say that, you know, some states had already said that fans could attend games. So we'll have to see about that. But I wouldn't bet on that. I think that MLB is banking on just the TV revenues. So I'm not sure that the fans are right now an important consideration.
Gotcha. I wondered about that. Well, Chris, we've talked for a while here. The big news, of course, from today is that Governor Ralph Northam here in Virginia has announced that we're moving to his Forward Virginia Phase 3 on Wednesday, July 1st. That means a lot of expansion as far as what you'll be able to do, the number of people that will be able to be included, you know, movie theaters, performing arts venues will be able to open. You know, this is all since phase two. So we're trending in a very positive direction as far as numbers are concerned. Most of these phases have lasted anywhere, you know, around three and a half weeks. So it is very possible that we could move out of, you know, this phase three and into unrestricted land, you know, before school starts. But anything that you want to add before we wrap up today, Chris?
Yeah, I'm going to write a column on this topic a little later. I had a great idea for something. Those who read my columns regularly, my reports on Virginia numbers, not columns, but specifically the COVID numbers, will recognize what I'm about to talk about. I run the numbers. Virginia's Department of Health website, I like a lot of Department of Health websites, gives great information on demographics in terms of the number of cases per demographic group and that kind of thing. And of course, you know, the sad part of the story is that, you know, this COVID-19 really affects the older generations. Just devastatingly, 80 plus in Virginia is 51.1% of deaths. So, but when you go around that, when you start doing some figuring, you look at the 0 to 60, and that's not a population they give. They'll go 0 to 10, 10 to 20, et cetera. But when you look at 0 to 60 in Virginia, the what's called an infection fatality rate is 0.048%. And, you know, I keep giving that number, and I said this on a recent podcast. That number doesn't really mean much. It's 0.048%. What does that mean? It's kind of like when you talk about billions of dollars. Nobody watching this, nobody sitting here on these screens right now has an idea what $1 billion really is. $1,000, yes. $1 billion, no. Those are silly numbers. And 0.048 is also a silly number. It's so small. What does that number mean? So I've started reporting in the last week or so, not just 0.048 fatality rate for 0 to 60, I decided to translate into a survival rate, because we can all identify with that. You know, dying is a bad thing, living is a good thing. The survival rate in Virginia from COVID-19 for people 0 to 60 is 99.952%. Mm-hmm. 99.952, not just 99.9, it's even better than 99.9. And so I was thinking about this. I don't know what, you know, how my brain works. It works really interestingly sometimes. But I was thinking about UVA basketball fans will appreciate this. There was a basketball game a couple years ago. UVA played Louisville. And Virginia trailed. It was March 1st, 2018. UVA trailed 66-62 with 0.9 seconds to go. You're down 4 points, 0.9 seconds to go. And Ty Jerome got fouled shooting a three-pointer. Dumb thing by the Louisville kid to do. Ty makes the first two free throws, misses the third one intentionally. It gets knocked out of bounds, et cetera, et cetera. All that happens. DeAndre Hunter makes a three-pointer at the buzzer, and Virginia wins. With 0.9 seconds to go, Virginia down by 4 points. Louisville had a 99.9% chance of winning that game. Yeah. Your chance of surviving COVID, if you're 0 to 60, is better than Louisville's chance of winning that game. Now, of course, Louisville lost that game. Think about how many, if you're a sports fan, that's the one thing you'll see in your lifetime that'll happen that way. You have a better chance of surviving that than Virginia had of losing that game, I guess is the way to put it. So those numbers really add up in a way to me. You know, a once in a lifetime kind of thing is what we're talking about here if you're 0 to 60. I just want to illustrate that if you're in your 60s, 70s, 80s, if you live in a nursing home, if you have other health issues, this is something you've got to pay really close attention to. If you don't, I'm not saying don't pay attention to it, but it's not your destinance. I would love to see, as I go out and do my morning runs and my afternoon bike rides, I'd love to see more people out on the greenways, out walking the streets, out enjoying life, and not clustered up. And I'm seeing more. Crystal, you're seeing more too. But I just want to encourage people that this is something. I have a worse chance of falling down the stairs after this podcast is over and not surviving that than if I got COVID-19. I obviously, Crystal, I didn't impress you with that story, so maybe I won't write that column. I don't know.
No, you did. I mean, I think numbers are important, and I think that, you know, what you're showing there is, you know, that the percentage of death in this case is very, very minimal. And I think I think that's one of the values that you bring is the fact that you break down the numbers in a way that people maybe haven't thought about them before. And, you know, of course, those people in that 0 to 60 can still be carriers of this virus and that kind of thing. So again, when you talk about if you're someone who interacts regularly with the senior populations or things like that, then there might be reasons that you want to take more precautions, because again, we haven't, the virus is still there as far as we can tell. You know, there are still people who are getting it. Like you said, in our example of someone that we know that got it, seems like it's mostly been asymptomatic. I know that other people know people who have had terrible times with this and that kind of thing too. So we're certainly not discounting that any of that is happening. Just to say that the death rate, especially among the 0 to 60, is very, very small. So Chris, go ahead.
Well, you know, you threw in there, you made it a 50-50 proposition that either it's going to be asymptomatic or you know people who've had really terrible times with it.
And a lot in between, yeah.
Mostly on the side of not much. You know, I would suggest that my grandparents have passed. They were both in their 80s. They've passed. It's been more than around 10 years now. During flu season, I was careful during flu season not to go around them if I felt like I had a cough. I mean, that's no different. I hope that we keep this vigilance, and we're not going to, Crystal. I'm just going to say it this way. I won't be cynical about this. The vigilance that we have now about COVID, we're not going to maintain in flu season next year. The flu kills people during the summertime. There's a baseline of number of people who get the flu and die during the summertime. There's a flu season. It doesn't go away. You said earlier, Crystal, that COVID-19 is here with us. It's always going to be here with us. The Spanish flu of 1918 is still here with us. It doesn't kill us like it did then, but it's still here with us. The common cold dates back to the 16th century. It's still here with us. It's always going to be here with us. And so we're not going to eradicate COVID-19. There will be a point when you don't have daily updates on the national news about how many people have COVID-19, because you don't have daily updates during flu season about how many people have the flu. And so I would suggest to people, and I'm trying to reinforce this message, live your life. The worst thing that can happen to you is not you're going to die from COVID-19. The worst thing that's going to happen to you is you don't live because you're afraid of COVID-19. So live, please, please, please. If you remember nothing else from this particular podcast, remember, live your life.
All right. So look for that column from AFP editor Chris Graham later today. And Chris, thanks for your time. I want to thank everyone who tuned in today. You can always send questions to us during these live podcasts. For Augusta Free Press, I'm Crystal Graham, joined by AFP editor Chris Graham. Again, we hope you all have a great night, and we'll be back as the news kind of demands it. So thanks for joining us.
Thanks, everybody.